Hi there. It's the final episode, so I thought we'd have a drink together and reflect on where we've been. Plus, good news, we're building a bakery again. This is Zach Martinucci, and you're listening to Against the Grain. You might remember when I told you about my Italian travels that I stayed at Caracol, a bakery out in the countryside with meals under the stars and lots of roaming kittens. Each night after dinner, we'd sample a liquore, or liqueur, a flavored after-dinner alcohol. Liqueurs are pretty common in Italy, essentially an infused alcohol using grappa, a high-proof alcohol that's accessible because it's the byproduct of winemaking, and then whatever fruits, nuts, or other flavors are left from the harvest. They come in everything from the classic limoncello with lemons to Nutella-flavored liqueur. I became known as an appassionato di liquori, or liqueur aficionado, and I'll say an amateur one at that, because we loved trying some every night, and pretty quickly it became a tasting flight. Most Italian families I stayed with had a collection of liqueurs, not necessarily because they were connoisseurs, but because they make one or two each year with some leftover fruit and collect them over time. Now, I didn't really fall in love with liqueurs until I came back to America and learned how they're made. I wanted to make my own liqueur in my Los Angeles apartment, so I Facebook messaged Maria, the grandmother on the farm, and asked her for a recipe. She said, step one, go to the forest and gather a kilo of berries. I said, Maria, I told you I live in Los Angeles. There is no forest. I'll go to the farmer's market this week. She said, fine, but you're not going to find anything as good. So I went and picked up some plums because they were in season, and to that I also added some fennel fronds and orange peel for flavor. She said, next, to your fruit, add some sugar, as well as pure of alcohol as you can find. I usually use grain alcohol like Everclear or vodka for a lighter version or a mix of the two. Then, you have to let that sugar-fruit alcohol mixture sit for 40 days. At the 40-day mark, you remove the liquid and add in a bottle of red wine to the fruit and sugar. That sits for a week. And then, you remove the fruit, at which point, if you're brave enough, I've learned, you can eat it. And then you mix the red wine and the alcohol that sat in the fruit. You can bottle it at this point if you want. And that combined liquid mixture has to sit until it reaches a total age of 100 days. Talk about the opposite of instant gratification. I had seen Food Network recipes for limoncello, and usually they allow a few days to a week. But making something you don't get to try for 100 days, that takes patience, and it's worth it. Ever since then, I started measuring my life in liqueurs. I've come to really like the 100-day period as a measure of timekeeping. At university, 100 days was approximately the length of a quarter, the time in which you would start and finish an entirely new course load from day one to that final paper. That's a whole class, but still not your whole college career. In 100 days, you can move to a new city and make friends. I've actually lived in Denver for about two 100-day cycles now, and things are still getting better. That might be one of the best parts, or the life lessons, of the liqueur. It takes a long time to make, and you have to be patient, because you know that good things like this take time. Things like really understanding a college course, or getting to know your community, or building a brand, or infusing grain alcohol so it tastes like sweet plums and not like death. Whatever, those things take time. But I don't sit down on day 100 and drink the whole 3 liters. I taste it and share it if I can and reflect on what the last 100 days have been like. Because it wasn't that long, but still, when you look back, probably so much has happened. And then I get to continue to enjoy it for a while longer. And like these experiences that take time to develop, the liqueur just gets better with age. Now, I was sneaky. I'll admit that I started this podcast in mid-March so that it would end today, approximately 100 days after we first got an offer to build our bakery in a coffee shop. That was the inspiration for starting to tell you this story, so I thought it would be a nice thing to reflect on and mark with a 100-day period. So today, we get to open a new liqueur. It's a coffee liqueur, one of my favorites to make and something that I thought would be festive for the occasion. And usually I use an Italian espresso with sugar and a vanilla bean. I kept the sugar and the vanilla, but this one was made with a pour-over brewing method from a Rwandan coffee from our roaster friends over at Jubilee. It's very Denver, and felt appropriate for the context. So on that note, I will bring over my giant glass jar, and we'll open it. All right, so I'm just ladling it. So it smells like coffee and alcohol, and, well, it tastes like it too. It's pretty smooth though. It's really sweet, which there's a lot of sugar. I guess that's the point of the liqueur, and it's nice. I'm going to hold on to this. You pour yourself a cocktail too if you want, unless it's like early Sunday morning, or do, I don't care. And let's look back at what the last 10 weeks were like. We met in March, when I told you how the bakery came to be, how I moved to Colorado to join my friends and open a few bakery projects under one roof. And when I started this podcast, we had just been given an offer to build a bakery in the back of a coffee shop. The unknown of looking for a space felt like it would take forever until one day, things just fell into place and it finally happened. A few weeks later, we had lost the bakery. But the journey had begun. I had already decided that I had bread to sell and cooking classes to teach and this podcast to publish, and I was going to do those things sooner rather than later. So bakery aside, I got out there into the world. That was a lesson from my entrepreneurship class, which I've also been taking over the last 10 weeks. The lesson was opportunistic advantage. You only see the potential once you get out there. So I started getting out there into the community, telling my story and bringing loaves of sourdough to pop-up events and coffee shops. I sold my first loaf of bread in Denver. Rebel Bread and Little Bites Bakery sold pastries at a vintage market. I've taught 3 pasta classes, bringing homemade gnocchi and tortellini and life lessons from Italian grandmothers to new Denver foodie friends. I built a website and some social media pages and an email newsletter, all platforms to spread the story of building a community through bread. I've pointed out to you that I've been spinning a lot of new threads in Denver, connections among people and places I frequent. And I've sat down for coffee with a lot of other creative movers and shakers, which turned out to assemble this community of people that ultimately led us to a new bakery proposal. A few, actually. And 10 weeks later, here's how the story ends. Last week, we were given a few options of where to set up shop. You can listen to the 9th episode for some details on each space. Now, I know that happened 100 days ago, too, but this time it feels like a better fit. We were really chosen by each space because they'd heard the story of what we're doing, why we care about the community and food education, and they don't just want to be landlords, but really partners in building this project together. And this week, we picked a bakery. We're in the middle of signing the paperwork right now, which means I can't tell you any more than that. But if all goes according to plan, and we know how that goes, you'll be able to find Rebel Bread, plus the kitchen from Little Bites Bakery and a new donut shop, with a storefront near downtown Denver this fall. I know, that's so soon. Now these 10 weeks have developed in ways I couldn't have anticipated, and I did my best to update you on everything I was allowed to share. At the same time, I did sketch a plan for the stories I wanted to tell throughout the season. My personal goal from the beginning, which I'll tell you now, was to create a series of episodes or conversations so that if we had never met in real life, you could listen to the podcast and get a pretty good idea of who I am, what I stand for, how I feel about food, and why Rebel Bread is the way it is, or maybe why I'm building it this way. These stories I told each week all come down to food being a significant part of our identity. It says so much about who we are and what we care about, and when we understand that, we can then intentionally use food to tell those same stories. And that's why I'm building a bakery dedicated to challenging the relationship people have with their bread. I realized in episode 8 that this was all the same story. The same things that fascinated me as a kid now influence the conversations across my life and research and business. Some of those things we talked about over the last 10 weeks include a conversation about making it. How will we know when we make it? What does that mean? And maybe how can we view our successes as making it a little bit each day, rather than waiting on some big end goal? Sitting with this liqueur and looking back at the last 100 days, I realize I've made it in so many ways. I've crossed so many things off that list. I have a website, I'm selling bread, I'm talking to people about that bread and their community, and we're still growing. And I'm finally at the point where one of the next decisions to make will be where to hang a hammock in the bakery. I told you my origin story, an adventure, a love story, an instruction manual, and a life lesson in bread over the course of many years. We talked about authenticity, that thing I spend so much time thinking about, and how we can look to tortellini and gelato, as well as our own everyday foods, as examples of how we claim value and meaning. And then how that applies to Rebel Bread. What does our bread say about what we stand for? I told you how I craft persona loaves, the process through which I make flavored sourdough based on my friends' personalities, which I've now transformed into the All My Friends Are Bread series, flavors inspired by the coolest peeps and places in Denver. I ranted about the cruffin at Mr. Holmes Bakehouse, including my thoughts on branding and the millennial approach to food, and I've told you about how I'm learning to embrace the both overwhelming and inspiring golden egg ideas that challenge and propel Rebel forward. If you missed any of those talks, I encourage you to revisit past episodes to hear more. I also want to tell you about an anthropology mentor of mine, Trisha, who has always stood out to me for two of her teachings. One, she's always in the back of my mind asking why. Okay, we get the food thing, but how come, Zach? Why? Tell me why I care. Maybe that's why I'm going about starting a bakery with a podcast. And the other is the insight that writing is a form of thinking. When she was guiding my cohort in writing our thesis papers, she'd remind us that the written component isn't just for getting your final ideas down on paper. Writing is the process through which you think about things. So write every day and rewrite. I'd always been so used to writing as just a final product to turn in and be done with that I hadn't necessarily considered it as part of the thinking process. Trisha turned me into a believer, and this podcast was part of that. I said from the beginning that it was also just a way for me to document this bakery project. And by sitting down each week to reflect on it and tell these bigger stories about food and culture, I now have a much clearer vision of what Rebel Bread is and where to take it next. These 10 weeks turned out to be very important for me to build up the confidence and motivation to move forward building this bakery. I encourage you to write out your ideas and rewrite them and practice telling your story because it will develop and grow and change right in front of you and maybe make everything a little bit clearer. I want to leave you with a story from one of my threads here in Denver, an interesting conversation I stumbled upon that brought these last 100 days into perspective. I recently had lunch with a really interesting Italian woman at this little cafe. Let me qualify that. By had lunch with her, I mean she's the owner and we talked while I was eating my lunch, and by cafe, I'm referring to this tiny kitchen with four bar stools and a counter that she's built in the stairwell or like lobby landing of a small office complex in our neighborhood. The name of the cafe is in English, but you know as soon as you walk in that it is distinctly Italian. I mean, it probably wouldn't come up as an Italian restaurant on Yelp, but it is so textbook Italian through her passion for food and flavors and hospitality. She serves classic Italian pastries and panini, some with local twists, and made-to-order juices and smoothies. We'll call the owner Sylvia, and as I'm sitting down eating the best sandwich I've had since moving to Denver, I overhear her talking to other guests as they walk in. I notice she takes each question as an opportunity to not just give an answer, but explain something about why her food is the way it is and why that matters. Someone asks where the bread is from. She could just say, the bakery down the street. But she adds, and I supply them with special flour that I get from Italy, because Italian soft wheat flour has a different gluten content than American bread flour. It's easier for our bodies to digest, and I prefer the flavor. And this goes on. She talks about her natural food colorings that she makes, and where each ingredient comes from, and even teaches Italian words when people don't recognize something on the menu. Her background is actually in wine education. Sylvia considers herself an educator, and if we were evaluating what makes her cooking authentic, she would tell you that food should be simple, of good quality, and local and organic when possible. I realize I have so many questions for her, but she's busy making everyone's lunch. So the one question I ask before I leave is, how do you take everyday opportunities to educate people through food? Sylvia likes that question. She thinks for a minute and then says, through conversations, by calmly, gently, politely telling people what you think about food and how they can access it and what it's worth. You have to speak to them like they're children sometimes because this might be the first time they're hearing some of these things. She has to explain why the panini are so expensive because the burrata is from Connecticut because that's the best supplier she's found and that's important to her. She says this is hard work because beyond that conversation, as a small business owner, she tells me, you will be worried and you will lose nights of sleep. Your fridge will break and the power will go out. It's not just about the food anymore. People will not understand or they won't like what you're doing. She says that's heartbreaking to hear. Sylvia tells me she's not trying to be a pessimist, just a realist. She wished someone had told her about all of these challenges, how she'd actually be spending her time before she got started. I laughed and say that right now, I'm realizing that the majority of how I spend my time on this business doesn't have to do with the food either. She laughs too. And what she says next, I didn't prompt or plan at all. Sylvia says that the work we do is never over. Education is a series of conversations, one person at a time. And it's hard as hell, which is a funny statement in her Italian accent. But at the end of the day, she tells me, when you lie in bed to go to sleep, you realize that you got to make good food for people, and you got to influence their perspective, and you got to do what you're passionate about. And all of that means that you're making it. Let's talk about what's next. I'm going to take a break from the podcast and spend the next few months building a bakery. On one hand, that means building a pastry program and painting a mural and some really cool things. On the less glamorous side, it means taking out loans and filling out lots of paperwork, which I currently can't see the end of. In the meantime, you can keep up with us on Instagram, Rebel Bread Denver, or our website, rebelbread.com. There's also an email newsletter there you can sign up for, because we're going to still be hosting pop-up events and classes and other events in bread sales throughout the summer here in Denver. Also, please stay subscribed here to the podcast. If there's any bonus content throughout the summer, some episodes here or there, they'll show up on your feed, and you'll be the first to get the episodes when we come to season two. Speaking of which, I don't have a release date yet, but I figure it will be late summer or early fall to bring you right back into the story as we prepare to open our first location. And I may announce that on social media first, so keep your eyes out. I would also love for you to consider sharing this podcast with a friend and or leaving a review. I'll tell you, I listen to a lot of podcasts and I am not a reviewer, like anywhere, not on Yelp, not on Google, not here. But as a producer now, a review is really important to me to get feedback. I want to hear what you liked and didn't and make the podcast stand out a little in the iTunes store. So to lead by example, I went and left reviews on 5 podcasts that I love. I wrote just a sentence to share what I liked about Good Food, Revisionist History, The Moth, Invisibilia, and Stories We Tell. It took me 5 minutes to write all 5, so if you have the time, I'd love for you to leave a note. Or just leave a rating on the 5-star scale. You don't even have to write anything. If you have feedback you'd like to share directly with me, or just get in touch, feel free to send an email to zach@rebelbread.com. Lastly, I just want to say some thank yous. Thank you to my family, Mom and Dad and Hal, Grandma B and Pa, and a happy Mother's Day to you, Mom and Grandma B. Thank you to Emma, Danielle, Lauren, Drew, Lexi, Caitlin, Patrick, Emily, and Will, my entrepreneurship classmates, my business partners, Renee, Sammy, and Thomas, and anyone else who has been a part of these conversations over the past 10 weeks. You have been a huge influence on me and Rebel Bread, and I am where I am today because of all of you. Cheers to you all. As always, thank you for being here. I wish you a great week and a great summer, and I look forward to talking to you in the next season of Against the Grain. Goodbye. This track was Dry Kolk by Brasmataz on Free Music Archive.